This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This is Ryan Wiggins with Brad Range filling in for Annie as she is off for the week, although we may still see her in the 2 o'clock hour, as I teased before. This is the Annie Fry Show / Manny Fry Show while she's gone. So do you remember when this was on the show, when we were talking to Will Scharf about 2 weeks ago? This was after the election, I believe, and he called in to the show. Actually, not this show. He called into the station at about 8:30 or 9 o'clock on election night.
Yes.
And this has become the stuff of legends around here, apparently, at this point. Because you'll be walking around, and for a week or so, people are like, man, I can't believe Will Scharf called it so early. Well, on that night, he was looking at numbers and things, just like I like to do, and said, Trump's got this thing. And
yeah.
he called in to the Mark Reardon, well, not Mark Reardon show, but the coverage led by Mark Reardon on election night, and said, hey, you guys, just to let you know, this election's over. And we all, you know, on this show, we were doing our live stream from the election headquarters of Annie's basement. And we all were really hesitant to make that call. Now, I was looking at the same data. I was looking at the data that apparently he was looking at, too, because this was the moment on the show that he said, yeah, I was talking to my buddy Rich Barris. And if you're looking at the camera, I went, oh, my gosh, I can't believe he was talking to Rich Barris. Because Rich Barris leads Big Data Poll, and he is such an outsider. And he's actually been called upon by Arizona election officials and things. He's actually made a pretty big name for himself in the last 4 years because his polling's pretty accurate. And so Will is apparently friends with him, and I follow him, and we were looking at a lot of the same people, I assume, and that's one of the ways I was able to call the election pretty early, too, on my weekend show. Well, apparently, the news item is that one of the big pollster aggregators has released their final results from 2024, and you know who the number one pollster from this cycle was?
I've seen this. It's Rich Barris.
It's Rich Barris, Big Data Poll, and he was going around dunking on everybody. Because that's the kind of guy he is. He's fun to follow.
Spiking the football.
On Twitter. So that has been fun to follow. And just since we're on the topic, I didn't plan on doing this. You know, we're still going to try to connect with DeRoy Murdoch here. But on my weekend show, the weekend before the election, and I went back the week after and played these back and said, here's how did I do? But here were my predictions, just in summary. Mm-hmm. I said Trump will win the popular vote narrowly, very, very narrowly. That looks like it's going to be very true. Trump will win all seven swing states. Got that one.
Mm-hmm.
Trump will, actually it was popular vote, it was swing states. And I didn't add up the Electoral College votes, but if I had, it would have been that Trump got 312, which is exactly what it ended up being. The third one was that the GOP would win Montana for the Senate, West Virginia. They would take Ohio, and then I predicted they would take one more seat. And I said that seat will most likely be either Pennsylvania or Michigan, and maybe a shot at Nevada. Well, lo and behold, I said 53 total seats. We got 53 seats. So I was running the board. And now to the fourth one, the last one was, what would the GOP do in the House of Representatives? Because this was the one that was the hardest to pick. Those GOP Senate seats, if you got 53, that was pretty good. But you knew they would probably get at least 51. So right. That was a safe pick. So going out on a limb and saying 53, I felt pretty good about that. But when I was picking the House, that was really difficult. Because you're talking about 435 elections across the entire country. You can't follow every single one of those. But you can narrow them down to approximately, we'll say, 25 swing districts. And if you can narrow down those 25 and really start to really look at the numbers of those, you can figure out who's going to win. So my prediction was that the GOP would narrowly again hold the House, which was a little bit of a risky pick this year.
Yeah.
Because if Kamala had done well and all those other things went that way, well, the House would too. But if Trump did well, which he did, it wasn't automatic that the GOP was going to take the House. You know why? Because, and now we know that this is true, before the election, the reports that we're seeing come out now suggest that the whole time, despite all their public rah-rah facade, the celebrities, the rallies, the internals for Kamala Harris's team yes. showed that she was probably not going to win, certainly not the favorite. They are saying now that they kind of knew that this might not be a great night for them, but that they held out hope that, hey, if we can keep it close and things just happen to break our way in certain counties, we actually could do this thing. But that they knew that this was most likely not going to be their night.
So everything that we heard about how close this was, all of this other stuff, fabrication?
At least publicly. And I don't blame them for doing that. If you're a campaign, you don't want to come out and go, we're actually thinking we have a 75% chance of losing here.
Well, yeah, I get that. But I mean, it wasn't them saying it.
You're right. It was all the pollsters.
Yes.
Which is kind of back to my point that the pollsters that we trusted and have trusted in many of these cycles were wrong. And the ones, the kind of independent pollsters that you're seeing rise up because they're not using traditional methods. The methods of polling are changing. The people who are just using phone calls like they used to 20 years ago, they're getting further and further away. And that may be on purpose because the media agencies that they're tied to like that they're getting it a little bit left and they want to leave it that way. But it also could be that their methods are outdated because people are using a lot more ground game polling, like asking people in person. They're using a lot more web-based polling and things like that. And they're using actual data of registration and turnouts and all these things that are things that I've been watching as well. But my point being for telling you all that is that the Democrat side, the DNC, knew ahead of time going into this election that they might be peeing into the wind on all this money that they were spending on the presidential campaign. Amazingly, they still spent $1 billion.
They spent it all.
But
$1 billion and $20 million.
$1 billion and $20 million, and they only had $1 billion. but knowing all that, they spent all this money. Well, there was word that they were shifting a lot of their money ahead of the election into more of those competitive House races because they knew, the presidency's looking like it's becoming a little bit more of a long shot. The Senate already was a long shot with those two seats of West Virginia and Montana. So let's try to at least maintain the House. Let's win the House back. Totally good strategy. That's what I would have done if I were in that position.
Well, it's kind of like all you can do.
And if you can retain one House of Congress with Trump president and with Republican Senate, you just did something major.
Yeah, it puts the brakes on everything.
Exactly. So when I predicted, I still think the House is going to be won narrowly by the GOP. That was going out on a limb a little bit, even with a red wave. Because you didn't know because the Democrats were focused a lot more on those House seats probably than Republicans were. So lo and behold, what has happened? Well, we're in a position now where the House has been maintained by the GOP, but very narrowly. We're talking about 2 to 3 seats. And this is actually one of the things we were going to talk about with DeRoy. And I was really looking forward to this because I gave this report yesterday at the beginning of the show that there are 2 House districts. There's really 3 that they're saying haven't been called, but Real Clear Politics has said the one in Iowa has already been called for Republicans. That gives them 220. That gives them a 3-seat majority.
Right.
But there are 2 in California that were split so close that they couldn't quite call them. And the votes that were outstanding, you know, if they went 50-50, then one Republican was going to win one of them and the Democrat was going to win the other.
Right.
But my point in that segment was, how are we now and today, 3 weeks plus from the election?
Right.
Yesterday was exactly 3 weeks. And we still don't know the results of at least 2 House races, maybe 3, but most likely 2. And you know where those 2 are?
California.
California, where the election laws are a little bit different than they are in states like Missouri, like Michigan, of all places, like Florida, many, many states that we can look to right now and say they have 100% of their votes counted. It's done. Or they're at 99%. And some of the races, they don't, you know, there's not anything outstanding that would change anything, so it's not as important. In California, though, there are races still in the 80%, 90%, 3 weeks out from the election.
It's wild.
So I get it if it's a close race that you want to be meticulous. But you also have the balance of the House hanging in the balance, or not quite because GOP already has it, but you have 2-4 total possible House members who have no idea whether they're in Congress or not. 3 weeks later, you could solve so many election integrity issues by making sure that doesn't happen in your state. People on the left who've been yelling about you're undermining democracy. Well, how about you give people confidence in democracy by not letting this BS happen? And here's the crazy thing. Since I gave that report yesterday, one of those seats was supposed to go Democrat, barely. The other one was supposed to go Republican, barely. Before I even tell you what happened, guess what happened? The one that was supposed to go Republican, barely, has now flipped to barely Democrat.
We just found enough.
They just have enough to give the Democrat a 50 to 100 vote lead all of a sudden out of nowhere. Now, is it possible that that's happened?
Absolutely.
Why does it always seem to go that way? Why is it always the late-breaking vote seems to benefit the Democrats?
That way, especially in states that are dominated by that party.
And that makes you very suspicious. Is it possible, again, that this is all on the level? It's possible.
Well, here's the thing, though. If it were all on the level and you got all these votes counted within a day or so, nobody's going to go, oh, okay. They'd be like, oh, man, that was just a really close election. But by whatever reasons, whatever their given reasons are for dragging this vote out, everybody, like, what it looks like is that they're like, okay, well, no, we need about 50 more. We need about 50 more. We need about 50 more. But you can't just get 50 and be like, oh, 100% of these came in for this candidate, because that would look suspicious.
Yeah, it's just like the kid who goes to the buffet and he sneezes real hard into his hands, and then he walks around a little bit, and then he goes and gets some food with his hands. You go, I don't even think I want to eat those potatoes. Somebody goes, no, 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 that's on the level. He went and washed his hands, and when the time he was walking around, you didn't see him. Well, you know what you could do, though? You could instill confidence in me by not letting that kid grab the food with his hands. Like, yeah. There's a lot of things you could do along the way that maybe it's all on the level, but you're not even trying to instill confidence in your elections. And that's my whole point, is that we're to the point now where people have been asking these questions, not just in one cycle, but for multiple cycles, and you haven't done anything about it.
That was the whole thing about the 2020 election. All those questions came from the way that they changed the rules leading up to it. And I remember saying that way before that. I wasn't working on the station at the time, but I remember saying that before. Since it doesn't matter if any of this stuff is on the up and up, when you do last minute changes in the rule, people aren't going to know what's going on, and they're going to look at it with a side eye. They're going to be suspicious of it. You're actively undermining trust in the election, even if everything goes the way you say it should go, because it just has the appearance of corruption.
Exactly. And it doesn't matter who's in charge. It's good to ask questions. If you are a Democrat in Missouri and you're like, hey, you know what? Missouri district whatever looks kind of funky. Ask questions.
Yes.
You know, if you are above board, you can withstand questions. Mm-hmm. Our Secretary of State, our Attorney General, they will gladly answer those questions for you very openly. But when you get into these states, and what I hated about 2020 is that when people had questions, they were told to shut up and go sit down.
Well, not only that, they were accused of being un-American.
Yes. And they've been tried and prosecuted for it now. President Trump, I mean, lots of people, Rudy Giuliani, whether you like him or not, these people were prosecuted for what they were saying and doing.
There is nothing more American than being suspicious and untrusting of your government.
Yes.
There is nothing more American than that.
And you know what? To put a point on this thing, and then we'll move along. And I got some great, great data that I was going to share with you in the next segment. I'm still going to do that. Stuff that you can take to your... I mentioned this yesterday. Stuff you can take to your Thanksgiving table. If anybody wants to bring up politics and be like, what about this point? That's in the next segment. It's just some stats and things. But if you are in a position in the United States now where you're not questioning the government, I question you. We've been through so much stuff that you need to be in a place where you are suspicious of the powers that be. Here's the good news. There's going to be a lot less government to question. So as they trim these things down like they are a fine filet mignon, we are going to continue to question. I guarantee you, we will continue to question all these things. But there's going to be a lot less people in charge of this stuff and a lot less money being spent. And we're all very happy about that. 122 here on the Annie Fry Show. And like I said, stick around if you want some of these stats about the last election that we just went through, just to share next time it comes up. Stick around. Man, this is such a time period song. I think I was at the age they were marketing to when this came out.
So my buddy had a band. My sister's boyfriend was the drummer. My buddy was the guitar player and stuff like that. Kind of introduced them and they shook hands. They made a band. And they always wanted to play Rage Against the Machine. But my buddy's like, can we just play a song that would bring the ladies to the front? And he launched into this song.
Did it work?
Yes.
This song is like the perfect, I'm going to guess 2004 or something.
Oh, a little bit before that because I was still in high school. Yeah. Okay. So you're talking maybe 99.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, because I would have been, I think, either in high school or just out of high school. And this was targeted to basically people watching, you know, Adam Sandler movies at the time.
And MTV.
Yeah. Gosh. You know, Kilmeade plays that song a lot.
Does
oddly.
He?
I don't know why. Yeah,
he's
that one.
Of us.
Some Incubus. Some some cranberries.
What was it, Sugar Ray?
He sticks with the hits, man. Hey, this is the Annie Fry Show. I'm Annie Fry Show, Ryan Wiggins and Brad Range filling in today. I mentioned that I've got some stats here for you if you're, you know, engage in some political conversations, just to keep things light, of course. I'm not saying
so
that you
be
should
that uncle.
Yeah, I'm not saying you should be the one to bring these up.
I am that uncle.
But if they happen to come up, you could casually drop some of these statistics and say, well, you know, if you have a relative who's like, oh, I didn't vote for that racist, you can say, well, I heard from the Annie Fry Show, Ryan Wiggins was referencing NPR, and right there, you're already sounding pretty smart. But this actually is all from NPR. So, like I said, you don't have to be like, well, I was reading on Fox News, because then you lost them. But if you're like, right. NPR actually was reporting.
Actually, NPR. You got to say it like that.
And if you say that and then you pause and you let some like light jazz play for about 30 seconds and then you come back.
You got to wear a turtleneck too.
Yeah. You'll sound like you're actually on NPR. but they are reporting, and I'll read the headline of this article to you. In this election, demographics did not determine how people voted. Now, that alone is just great news. Because if we are getting past where we are looking at everybody through the race, gender, age lens, and not thinking about them as just people who have the same problems as you do, because that's pretty much what Trump did. I don't know that he was trying to do that, but that is what he did.
Yeah.
So I'll read this to you. It says, in the debate over whether demography is destiny, the 2024 presidential election showed clearly it is not. You should not, in summary, look through the eyes of race and gender at the way people voted anymore. That's great news. It goes on to say Democrats long believed that the diversifying of the country would lead to their party's long-term success. But President-elect Trump was able to win over many of the voters Democrats believed they could rely on, showing identity is less important when people feel negatively toward the incumbent party on things like prices and immigration. In other words, on things that are things.
Yes.
Things that matter to everybody.
I think it was Ben Shapiro that would say this. He says presidential elections are referendums, and it's always a referendum. It's either a referendum on the person who wants the job or the person who already has the job who's running for re-election.
Exactly. And this is stuff that if you've been following politics for years, Democrats have been like, look, the Browning of America, they call it a lot of times, is going to lead to permanent Democrat majorities across the board.
Do you know what that's all based off of?
Tell me.
It's Barack Obama's 2012 win.
Okay. That sounds right.
That was what they have based it all on. That coalition, but they have not been able to replicate that coalition in any presidential election cycle since.
It says, to your point, the demographic shifts seen in this election were pronounced in the swing states, with different groups mattering to different degrees in Trump's sweep, according to exit polls. Now, before we jump into the numbers here, because they go a little state by state, they'll actually give you the numbers for specific groups of people. But I will tell you this, as somebody who watches numbers, the odd thing is the party that spent $1 billion in the swing states actually did get a return for their investment. They just wasn't enough. So all of these trends that, and these are, look, NPR here is looking just at swing states, and that's the most important place to look. Yeah. I don't blame them for that. But if you look across the rest of the country, the swing was actually more pronounced in states that weren't swing states. Why? Well, because there was a lot more advertising going on in the swing states. And so that kind of solidified everything back to the middle a little bit more. But if you were in Virginia or Illinois or Missouri or California, the swing right was actually more pronounced than in the swing states. So here is what NPR says generally, and we'll dive into this a little bit more because I think it's really, really interesting. First, Democrats lost ground with Latino voters. Duh, we all knew this was coming, and it did happen. In the last few elections, they have gradually declined in their support of the Democrat Party, NPR says, and 2024 saw a dramatic swing to the right with them. In some states like Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Michigan, Latinos shifted right by more than 20 points.
That's massive.
That is massive. Let's pause there real quick. Do you think that there is a specific reason for that, or do you think that we're just in a place where, you know, this is the trend? We all saw it coming.
I think this is the trend. I think people are tired of the nonsense, and they got away from the stuff that made those people want to vote for them to begin with.
Going on, Democrats lost ground with voters under 30. So in every swing state, with the exception of Georgia, where Harris gained slightly, Georgia being the only outlier, and Arizona, where support was the same, the decline was especially pronounced in the former blue wall states in the industrial Midwest, where younger voters moved in double digits away from Democrats. The interesting thing about this one is that it is way off the map. This was not a group of people that that they were saying would move toward Trump, yet voters under 30 in nearly every swing state did. The next one. White voters were a higher share of the electorate and voted in larger numbers for Trump. We kind of saw that as a possibility. But NPR says also that black voters did and supported Democrats in lower numbers compared to previous elections in many places. But the shift was less dramatic than with Latino voters, where they were a massive shift. Last one. There's a political realignment taking place, NPR concludes, not just on education and race, but also by age. Older voters, for example, were once seen as a solid Republican voting bloc, but seniors shifted away from Trump in the majority of the swing states. Mm-hmm. It's the only group that did. Senior voters, not that they went hard Democrat, but they were the only group that moved slightly to the left among demographic or age groups. Pause right there. Why do you think that is? Because that's fascinating.
I think that is because there was a strong effort to paint that he was coming after their Social Security, their Medicare, their Medicaid, stuff like that. I think that they were able to kind of make that case for them. So that's why I would think that they would shift.
I have a different theory on that. I think that when you get to a certain age, you're looking for stability. You don't want to change things around a lot. You like things the way they are. The bigger the change, the more you're like, nope. And in the past, Republicans had presented, because they're conservative, naturally, they had presented the party of kind of the stability. You know, Democrats were the radicals. They were moving the country left. They were moving the country all over the place socially. But in this election, again, not that the majority of seniors voted for Kamala Harris, but if you saw a swing to the left, it was because in this election, uniquely, the Republican was the change candidate versus the Democrat was the establishment. So I think that's why you saw that in this election versus others, that senior voters did what they did. Now, vote state by state. I said we'd go through these because it is amazing. Let me read what it says about North Carolina. Trump makes eye-popping gains with young voters. So in 2020.
Yes.
In 2020, Hispanic and Latino voters voted. I'll start with the young ones. I'll go to Hispanic. It says 18 to 29-year-olds voted for Joe Biden plus 17.
Right, right.
In this election, they voted for Kamala Harris plus 3. So still won them, but barely,
barely
in North Carolina.
Seismic.
How about this? Hispanic Latino voters in North Carolina. In 2020, they voted for Joe Biden plus 15. In this election, Trump plus 1.
Yes.
They actually swung to Trump.
Seismic.
Hispanic Latino voters. Arizona Hispanic Latino voters. Plus 24 in 2020, plus 10 in this election. That's a 15-point swing. Here's the one I was like, oh my gosh. This is actually the reason I brought the article up, because I looked at this graph and thought, how is that even possible? Nevada, Hispanic Latino voters. In 2020, voted for Joe Biden plus 26. In this election, voted for Donald Trump plus 2.
That's a huge swing. 26, so 28-point swing?
28-point swing.
Wow.
For Latino voters in Nevada. But that was eclipsed by a different group in Nevada.
Okay, let's hear it.
Asian voters, plus 29 for Joe Biden in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 30 points to the left. In this election, let me just restate this. Now, if you're listening, you're like, that's a lot of numbers. Just listen to what I'm saying about this one demographic group in Nevada. Asian voters in Nevada. In 2020, they went for Joe Biden by plus 29 points. In this election, they went for Donald Trump plus 23. That is a shift like you don't ever see.
That's unheard of.
It's this kind of stuff is the reason why NPR is having to, they don't want to write this article. They're having to write this article, partially because they're about to lose funding. Michigan, Harris saw sharp declines with Latinos and younger voters too. Hispanic was plus 11 in 2020.
Well, you can tell it's NPR because of the way they're phrasing it.
Exactly.
Harris saw sharp declines, not Trump made ground.
Right. That's a very good point. Harris saw sharp declines, plus 11 in 2020 to Trump plus 21. That's about a 30-point swing with Hispanic Latino voters in Michigan. How about young voters in Michigan? And we'll move on. I'm just kind of a numbers guy. I think this is really fun, especially since it's NPR. 18 to 29-year-olds, so Gen Z-ish.
Yeah.
In 2020, they voted for Joe Biden plus 24. In this election, Donald Trump plus 3.
That's a huge swing.
That, across basically every group, you get my point here, the Democrats lost ground with everybody other than a small portion of seniors that shifted left.
And they didn't, they didn't gain that much ground with the seniors.
And yet, we're still in a point where I think they're still having these conversations, maybe behind closed doors. They're trying to figure out, how do we make these things go away? And it's possible that things move back after Donald Trump. Is it that Kamala Harris, Joe Biden was that bad? Is it that Donald Trump is that good? Or is that attractive to different demographic groups?
You know,
we don't know.
I think when you look at that, you have to say it's a little bit of both. But the question is what was so off-putting about the Joe? Like, whenever you're talking about certain demographics, you go, okay, yeah, definitely economy. But whenever you're talking about 18 to 20, what was it? 18 to
18 to 29-year-olds.
You're getting into that social area.
Exactly. It's a cultural shift.
Now, this is what's interesting about this to me. Are the Democrats stuck with the cultural war that they have decided to fight? The stance that they've decided to take? And I'll use Congress as an example. There's been this fight on Capitol Hill about whether or not trans women, male to female.
I don't know. That
transitioning.
You can say anything these days.
Rep Sarah McBride, I think is what the name is.
Yep.
And then Nancy Mace has come out and said, no, you can't use the bathroom. Democrats are stuck in that because if they change course, what they are then admitting is actually everything that we've been championing for the past 4 to 8 to 12 years or however long it's been is just a lie and it was all political.
Mm-hmm.
They can't pivot off of that.
Painted into a corner.
Yep.
They don't know what to do. And I made this point on my weekend show because I've been addressing this question a lot for whatever reason. I think it's interesting to watch strategy, probably, is why I've been talking about this subject. That I've been asking the question, what do you think? There are two factions in the Democrat Party right now. One is saying we need to move back to the center. This is your James Carville. You know, not that he's like the sanest person in the world, but he doesn't like the woke stuff. And he's a traditional kind of Bill Clinton Democrat saying we need to move away from the far left social stuff. and at least not make that the centerpiece of campaigns. He's not saying it'll go away, but he's saying that needs to not be the focus. And then you have your John Olivers, to some extent your John Stewarts, mm-hmm. who I respect, actually. They're smart guys, but they're really not moving on the woke stuff. They're saying, yes, they'll make fun of it, they'll do jokes, but they're not saying they should move away. In fact, John Oliver was saying that they should have done more. They should have ran on transgenderism and stuff like that more, and then in the same breath says it's not actually that big of an issue. Why do Republicans make such a big issue out of it?
Because we're getting clobbered by it.
Yeah, exactly. So there's these two factions of the Democrat Party that are trying to figure out where to go from here, and they can't really figure it out. And my whole point of bringing that subject up is that I think these conversations are happening now because of things like this NPR article. Mm-hmm. They've lost with so many groups. Does that mean it's permanent? That's a question to be asked later. I don't know.
How sticky is it?
We'll find out. But they do have to have this conversation now. But my prognosis is they're not going to change anything. You know why they're not going to change anything? Because they don't have to. They have Donald Trump to complain about for 4 years again. They're not going to do anything but just yell about him.
Maybe. But I feel like that strategy has just become a clanging cymbal in the background. It's like living by a railroad track. You've yelled the most extreme things about this man for, what are we going on, 8 years now?
Mm-hmm.
It's all noise in the background. It's like when you first move by a railroad track, that train is loud and intrusive. And by 2 years in, you don't even recognize when it comes through. It's just part of the thing. And I don't know that that's going to be such a great, effective strategy.
But Brad. Trump's going to walk into the room and he's going to go, you can't quit me, baby. And they're just going to go nuts again.
Okay, they are, but
they're not going to stop.
It won't be effective.
Yeah, I don't know that it will be either. I do think that Republicans will have a tough time in the midterms, and that will be justification for Democrats to not move at all. It'll be the same exact thing. And hey, maybe that means 2028 means you get another Republican president if they don't move on from their platforms. But right now, I really don't know what they have to offer.
I don't know how they can move on from them.
It is 1:43 here in the Midwest. This is the Annie Fry Show. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to talk about the poll and your responses to that poll in just a minute. Here it is, if you haven't logged on to the Annie Fry YouTube page yet. How do you participate in Black Friday? And if you got some good deals to drop, I mean, you know, we got the live chat. You can let us know. We'll hit that in just a minute here on the Annie Fry Show. Stick around. Hey, this is the Annie Fry Show. This is Ryan Wiggins filling in with Brad Range. The YouTube live chat poll today, how do you participate in Black Friday? There are a few options. One, I'm a doorbuster in person, maybe later in the day, online only, or I don't participate. I have a feeling I know which one's going to win this, and I think it's going to be I don't participate. However, if you are a Black Friday shopper, I would like to know how you're doing that these days, because the online Cyber Monday thing is kind of interesting, but that really does bleed into Thanksgiving Day at this point. So let us know what you think about this. You got any thoughts about this one, Mr. Range?
Yeah, I look at this and I go, you know, it's different now because they're opening the stores on Thanksgiving. And so whenever, like, I remember watching the news reports and all that stuff of the people just sitting there waiting in line, you know, camped out. Hey, we're going to have this TV for sale.
It's an event.
And it was like a ridiculously low price. So this is back when like flat screen TVs were $900 and $1,000. And like, oh, we'll have them for like $300.
Yeah.
And so people would camp out and then they would go in there and they would fly through the doors and people would dive in there and grab the deal because there'd only be like four of them.
I see a couple of people online referencing the weather that day. I haven't looked ahead, but it says on my phone that it's supposed to only be a 37 degree high that day. Doesn't look like any snow. Kathy online says no, she's only shopping online. Chris says no, never would I go out into that mess. Captain Planet says I'm just doing online Black Friday. Dale, a year ago, my wife would stand in line for something we wanted, but it's all online now. I'm assuming that means years ago, not a year ago. Steven, here's a cool one, says, I don't participate. This just came through like a minute ago. I don't participate in Black Friday, but my wife and I will be having our second child early Friday morning. So we are getting a different kind of doorbuster deal. Congratulations, Steven. That's very cool. If you want to participate in this poll or drop some sweet deals like somebody was telling us about guitar pedals, that's cool too. The weather this weekend does say that there might be some snow, though. Looking at 34 degree high on Saturday. I don't know what kind of snow, what chance of snow, but it does say that it's possible. So if that's going to affect your travel plans, just giving you a heads up, I'm sure you've been watching it more than just listening to this. But I pulled up an article here that I really haven't dove into deeply, and I would like to, because there's a, okay, there are people on the left who are avowed social progressives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then there are people on the left who are environmental activists.
Okay.
And I really like the environmental activist side of the left. I don't agree with them for using the government to achieve those ends, mm-hmm. but I like those people. They are usually very committed to their cause. They're very, I don't know, genuine. They're usually pretty genuine people as long as they're not out there yelling that the government needs to be more involved in your life. I like that there are people that are out there like, hey, I'm here for the environment.
Yeah, and I would say they're also doing and looking at stuff that the average person doesn't have time to look at or doesn't care to look at, and they're catching little things that might have gone under the radar that are actually harmful to the population.
Yeah, exactly, and that's valuable. I like that that exists. This headline caught my attention because that group of people has had this movement that's it kind of existed that I still am not sure why. But I almost every time I see it, I'm like, hey, I don't really know what you're doing, but I appreciate you that you're there. The headline is, which drinking water is healthiest? The pros and cons of tap, bottled, filter, and more. Now, I haven't had a chance to really dive in because I just saw this headline, but it made me think of those people that I'll see signs in people's yards that say, you know, healthy water is life, you know, and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't really know what it is that you're reading that's your main issue. But isn't it weird that we're in a place after the 2024 election, going into the 2024 election, that all of a sudden, if that was your main issue, did you start to consider Trump after RFK shook hands with him on the stage? I mean, where does that put you?
Well, if that's your main issue, because, I mean, RFK is the one that has been talking about fluoridation in the water. I don't know if you saw this or not, but the Surgeon General of Florida has come out and said that and recommended against fluoridating.
Yeah. Well, we knew that RFK was going to say that.
So. And I know everybody's like, oh, no, what about your teeth? And it's like, it'll be fine. There's fluoride in your toothpaste. Just brush your teeth, which is good practice anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, if that's your number one issue, if that's your main issue, depending on how big that is, maybe you do look at Trump. You go, you know what? I'm a Democrat through and through, but my keystone issue is this. And it's that guy saying that they're going to do something about it.
I don't know if RFK won him the election. I certainly don't think it hurt anything.
It definitely helped him.
Because there were people in my life that I know who have been following what RFK says, and they may not agree 100% with the things that he says, but they're health advocates.
Mm-hmm.
And they want, and I want our food to be healthier. I don't want it to skyrocket in price. So right. This has got to be kind of a gradual thing. I would hope that the Health and Human Services, FDA, would work with companies to say, look, this is where it's headed. Tell me about what you're doing right now, because we don't want to bankrupt you, but we also want to move the population in a healthier direction. And so far, this has been a source of much contention with a lot of, you know, all the same thing with the revolving door of you work at the agency that monitors the company that you end up working at, that monitors mm-hmm. the company that you have to lobby for for regulations. It's a big circle, and that's got to end. And actually, that's one of the things Trump has proposed, is that he would say, if you've worked at an agency, you can't work for a company and vice versa that has to do with that agency for a number of years. It's not forever, but it's for a long time to stop that stuff from happening because it's corrupt. But if you were way into health and you heard that RFK was going to join the Trump team, I don't know. I don't really know if that automatically made you go, oh, well, then I guess I'll consider Trump. But if that's your number one issue, Maybe it did.
It really depends on how important that issue is to you. If you are a single item voter and that's your issue, Donald Trump's campaign had a better advocacy for health issues than Kamala Harris did.
You know, when he came along in 2016, he was saying things that he'd been saying for years but weren't really a part of the political mm-hmm. discussion, like NATO needs to stop ripping us off. All these countries are getting sweetheart deals, stuff that you're like, I didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't know that was happening. Yeah. And he's known it for years, and he was right, and he's still right. This is, and so people heard that, and the comments like, well, of course I'm using the tax code to save money. I'm not an idiot. You know,
that makes
people go, oh, of course that makes more sense. In this year, though, I didn't hear him saying a lot of new things. He's the same guy because he's been saying it for years and he's not changing. What I did notice, and Annie's kind of said this too, is that the health issue is the one that everybody goes, oh, I didn't know that that could be a part of this discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it wasn't him that was doing it, but it is now included in his campaign after he shook hands with all the Star Spangled Banner behind him on the stage with RFK. So just I've been kind of browsing this article as we've been talking. It says that tap water is the most cost-efficient way to get your water, of course. Filtered water adds an extra level of assurance. Plastic bottled water raises some concerns with the plastic bottles, but it's still just the bottle itself. The water's clean. But they actually, in this article, recommend either glass bottled water or fridge dispenser water.
Yeah, because that's filtered.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
I like it out of the well.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Straight out of the old bucket?
Garden hose, whatever. That water tastes
that's the way
best.
I like my bidets.
Gross. I thought we were done with that.
I thought we had less time in this segment. I was really hoping I could make that phrase, you could hit the music, and then we're out. Nope.
Nope.
This is what you get with a fill-in host. Are we going to see the main host of the show?
It's almost over, Ryan.
In the 2 o'clock hour, we don't know. Annie might stop by with a special guest. We'll let you know if that happens. But regardless, I do know one thing. Trisha and Ethan are going to join us for some fun in the 2 o'clock hour. Stick around.